And I think the reason that Zuckerberg has not fired him is because Zuckerberg also like needs him. And Thiel, you know, realizes that.
I'm Scott McGrew. Welcome to Sand Hill Road.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
As a personal favor to me, if you would just say something completely bizarre.
Is there anything left to say?
Lizards are running the government. You know, just something. give me something here.
That's me, with some support from Sarah Lacey, teasing venture capitalist Peter Thiel on the television show Press Here.
You know, I don't think I've been saying things that are that bizarre. And you say that we have a bubble in education. Mm-hmm. This is not even a shocking thing to people anymore. Mm-hmm.
Now, Peter might not think his ideas are bizarre, but I think everyone can agree he's quite contrarian, like paying college students to drop out of college, like aligning himself with Donald Trump.
Good evening. I'm Peter Thiel. I build companies and I support people who are building new things, from social networks to rocket ships.
I recorded a couple bars. Let me just make sure it's working.
Yeah. That's Max Chafkin, who has written a new book about Thiel called The Contrarian.
Okay, so I'm recording now.
We did, by the way, invite Peter to participate in this interview. We didn't hear back. Now, I'm guessing if you subscribe to this podcast, you know who Peter Thiel is. If you don't, he invented PayPal, along with a few others, and was one of the first investors in Facebook. He's still on the board at Facebook. You also may have seen Peter depicted as the fictional and socially awkward Peter Gregory on the equally fictional HBO comedy Silicon Valley.
So we need 15 million now, or we'll have to shut down.
Have any of you ever eaten at Burger King? Do you see this?
The Junior Whopper?
No. Not the sandwich. This seed atop the breading.
Those are sesame seeds.
A high number of these breadings have sesame seeds on them.
He's depicted by the character Peter Gregory. How much of that do you think they got right?
So it's very interesting. I mean, the Peter Gregory character in Silicon Valley is the best, right?
It's
such a good character. And, you know, that there's a scene where he's sort of like, it looks like he's encountering a McDonald's or a Burger King quarter pounder with cheese for the first time and is like studying the sesame seeds. And it's just this incredibly sweet but somewhat caustic portrait of a kind of socially awkward, you know, genius.
Over the next half hour or so, we're going to learn things about Peter Thiel a lot of people didn't know, like about the time he started a magazine about NASCAR. Weirdly enough, I want to start with NASCAR.
Love it.
NASCAR. What in the world does Peter Thiel have to do with NASCAR?
So, little known fact, you know, Peter Thiel, best known as the founder of PayPal, Palantir, First Investor, Facebook, major backer to Donald Trump, you know, huge figure in Silicon Valley. Back in the early aughts, back after he sold PayPal and he was kind of maybe getting his, you know, just getting his feet as a billionaire, he started a NASCAR magazine. And it was, I actually have the magazine here at this, so that like the title is escaping me, but I can look it up right now.
Yeah, take your time.
Yes. Okay. So yes, Peter Thiel started a magazine called American Thunder. And now this is a different era, right? Magazines were
a thing
back then, you know, the glory days. As a magazine writer, you know, it kind of breaks my heart. But needless to say, the magazine didn't do super well. Peter Thiel did not prove to be an amazing NASCAR publisher.
The New York Times said at the time that Peter Thiel would not know Richard Petty if Petty ran over him.
But the funny thing is, I think there's actually something there, and it's kind of cool that you started there, because one of the reasons Thiel, you know, started the NASCAR magazine was this idea that, you know, there was something cultural that was happening that the mainstream media didn't appreciate. Some of the people that he hired for this magazine were kind of, you know, politically right. He was already back then trying to sort of, you know, move the culture in a direction that he wanted, which is a more conservative direction. And he was doing it in this kind of totally weird and unexpected way, especially for a technologist, you know, starting a NASCAR magazine. So you have this like NASCAR magazine that's publishing these kind of like political screeds, and you know, and these guys don't know that much about cars, and it failed, but there was something there, and so it is kind of like one of the first attempt of this Silicon Valley guy to sort of affect the broader culture.
The NASCAR thing is more than an amusing anecdote. There's a metaphor there. Thiel, arguably part of the elite, dipping his toes in middle America and populist pursuits.
We cannot afford to be so politically correct anymore.
One of the most peculiar aspects of Peter Thiel, and again, where some people who've never heard of him may have heard of him, is his association with Donald Trump. You write, the two of them, they are in almost every respect polar opposites. Trump, the libidinous New Yorker, incapable of preserving an inner monologue, and Thiel, the introverted citizen of three countries whose every utterance is measured and qualified.
Yeah, they are really so different, and yet they also have a lot in common. And that's what I think really surprised people about the, you know, Thiel's endorsement of Trump in 2016. And a lot of people don't appreciate, you know, it all kind of happened so fast, and it's sort of hard to remember, but he hadn't donated to Trump when he gave the speech at the convention. He went to the Republican convention and he gave a very short but very good speech in prime time that was noteworthy because it was the first time that that a gay person had been on stage at the RNC and had acknowledged their sexuality.
Of course, every American has a unique identity. I am proud to be gay. I am proud to be a Republican. Most of all, I am proud to be an American.
So it was a, you know, kind of a boundary breaking moment, and also and pretty different because like the last time a gay person had been on stage, they had been kind of booed, you know, and this time everyone cheered, and it was, you know, it was like an expression of this kind of like new Republican Party, maybe. Maybe we're being a little optimistic there, but anyway, he hadn't donated until October. He donated 7 days after or thereabouts after the Access Hollywood tape dropped, and basically everybody else had written off Donald Trump's candidacy. Many people in the press, especially, had written off Donald Trump's candidacy. Thiel, instead of running away, which is what a lot of Republicans were doing at the time, kind of ran towards that controversy. And so in that sense, it was a contrarian investment. And that's kind of his thing. He, you know, he's an investor. He's like buying a low stock. And in that sense, it was like a very clever move because it got him like a lot of credibility with conservatives at what I would argue is a kind of a low price. But it isn't just an investment, because I think Trump, in a lot of ways, despite their kind of stylistic differences, there are parts of the Trump ideology that are almost, that are really, really similar to the Thiel ideology. And that's something like, you know, a lot of people don't appreciate either. Thiel, before he started PayPal, started this, you know, activist conservative newspaper at Stanford, the Stanford Review. And the Stanford Review was basically all about provocation. It was kind of like the alt-right before the alt-right. And, you know, they were very controversial. It was all about kind of, you know, getting the goat of the, you know, basically like trolling the libs the 1980s. And Thiel wrote a whole book about political correctness and this idea that you can't say what you really want to say anymore. And like, that was at its core, kind of the message of Donald Trump's candidacy. And I think in some ways, you know, that was part of the appeal. Trump as a quote unquote disruptor. I think people assume when like tech people talk about disruption, they mean it, you know, metaphorically. And then sometimes they mean it metaphorically, like as a way to take some market. But I think somebody like Thiel actually values disruption in the more literal meaning, that like, let's shake things up and see what happens.
Well, you have to shake things up pretty much in order to do something of consequence. And I have shaken things up.
And I think there was some of that going on with Trump. Thiel's also, you know, an immigration hawk, somebody who had been involved in, despite being an immigrant. I mean, this is a something that's perhaps in conflict, but he, despite being an immigrant, had been donating to these far-right organizations that are all about limiting immigration. Donald Trump, of course, that was a core part of his appeal.
Tonight, roaming free to threaten peaceful citizens.
So despite the stylistic differences, there were things in common. And then I think Thiel, you know, very savvily realized, number one, that Trump had a chance. Number two, that he could become very influential in Trump's circle by taking a little bit of a risk.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
You mentioned that Thiel buys Trump stock at an all-time low right after the Access Hollywood tape comes out. Regardless of anyone's opinion of Trump, I think we can all agree that a vast majority of people who associated themselves with Trump found out in the end it was a net negative for their image and their career. Was it a net negative for Peter Thiel?
Nope. I would argue that Thiel is the guy who played Donald Trump, played that kind of game better than any of the other kind of
hangers on.
I'm trying to find a nice way of putting it. But yeah, I mean, I think you're pointing out something really, really crucial, which is that almost everybody who kind of tried to ingratiate themselves with Trump wound up getting basically embarrassed, humiliated, cast aside. You know, Trump demanded like a level of loyalty and was so erratic that he tended to kind of embarrass people, and or people would be so thrown by this that they would then just kind of like self-immolate. Thiel, in some ways, didn't do super well in the transition. I think he came in, he had a lot of influence. He sort of allied himself with Steve Bannon and kind of the alt-right faction of Trump world, and those guys kind of lost. I mean, Bannon was pushed out, you know, 6 months after the administration started. Thiel didn't get all that many people, into the White House, but he also kind of was able to maintain distance from Trump, you know, as Trump's presidency started to fall apart. So Thiel didn't endorse Trump. He continued to support Trump, continued to kind of, you know, definitely be aligned with the sort of Trumpy faction of the Republican Party, but managed to kind of like not be tarnished by the last year of Trump's presidency, which, you know, kind of, I think, again, I don't think this is a controversial statement, but kind of devolved into scandal, and you know, there the pandemic, the kind of the impeachment, the January 6th, et cetera.
Another impeachment, Thiel, yes,
yeah, exactly. Second impeachment. Thiel kind of missed all that. He didn't take responsibility for it. And then coming out of the Trump presidency, you know, let's look at the results. The results are his net worth has exploded. Now, some of that has to do with just the stock market and the fact that everybody who owned equities, you know, did very well. But not all of it. I mean, a big part of Thiel's wealth comes from Palantir. Palantir is a government contractor. Biggest customer is the U.S. government. It had a very good, very good 4 years under Donald Trump. And obviously, you know, that doesn't mean that Thiel bought influence or something like that. I mean, obviously there, you know, there's, right, people can argue about it, but I think what, and Palantir for sure will say, no, this had nothing to do with our political connections. But of course, government contracting is inherently political, and it can't have hurt. And so so he did very well, and so that's on the kind of money side. His net worth has exploded; it's gone up a lot. And then on the political side, right now he is sort of positioned himself as one of the key sort of power brokers of the sort of Trumpist wing of the Republican Party. So two candidates right now, the two main ones, one of them is Blake Masters, who's running for Senate in Arizona in a Republican primary. And Thiel's donated $10 million to him. And J.D. Vance, who's, you know, kind of best known as the guy who wrote Hillbilly Elegy, but who also happened to work for Peter Thiel, one of Peter Thiel's venture capital firms, and who Thiel has donated $10 million to him. And both those guys are running as, you know, basically Trumpist true believers. Like the mainstream Republican Party has been, you know, bad to Donald Trump. We need to crack down on the big tech companies. Kind of an interesting bit of tension there. And of course, these are like the exact beliefs that Peter Thiel espouses. They are in a lot of ways. I mean, of course, they're their own people, and I don't think it's entirely about the money, but I think they are in some ways extensions of him. Blake Masters in particular, kind of Thiel's right-hand man for the last 10 years. And I think there's a pretty good chance he'll win the Republican nomination. J.D. Vance is in maybe a slightly more competitive election, but both of them could win. And so there's a chance that they both, that Thiel will have more influence in 2022 and 2024 than he did in 2015. And I think they're not too many other people who are in that Trump inner circle who can really say that. Even if Trump is on the ballot, like a lot of those people have been sidelined. So, I think he's come out way, way ahead of where he was in, say, 2015. And I think you have to look at that investment as a good investment. Whether or not it was good for America is something that, you know, political people can debate and will debate.
Now, when the right attacks Facebook, he's on the board at Facebook. He is Facebook. You actually wrote that Zuckerberg is the ultimate Thiel acolyte.
Yeah. Well, and that's the one of the big mysteries, and this comes up in the book, and is like why is he still on that board? And you know, if I'm Mark Zuckerberg, and I hear J.D. Vance, a prominent a politician who wrote a best-selling book, who has a Ron Howard movie, you know, made like J.D. Vance has a big political megaphone saying that, you know, Facebook is terrible. And you know, in an interview, he was asked about Peter. What does Peter think about this? And Vance said, you know, I think correctly that Peter's, you know, has problems with big tech. And Mark Zuckerberg you know, I it's hard to understand like why he doesn't say like, hey, Peter, you know, you're off the board. And I talk about this in the book. There have been a series of other incidents over the years where he has been funding or supporting or providing, you know, at least tacit support to basically a bunch of people who have made it their business to make Facebook's life terrible.
Yes.
And I think the reason that Zuckerberg has not fired him is
which Zuckerberg
because,
has the power to do. Zuckerberg has,
absolutely.
Has
yeah,
the
he controls the board.
Stock in Facebook.
Is because Zuckerberg also like needs him, and Thiel, you know, realizes that. So you know, Facebook has political vulnerabilities. Facebook does not want to be the MSNBC of social networks. They want to be, you know, the social network for everybody. They don't want to be seen as the left social network or the right social network. They want to keep everybody happy because that's the way to be the biggest company they could possibly be. And so having Peter Thiel, prominent conservative, and not just a prominent conservative, not like a soft centrist conservative, but a hardcore, you know, buddies with Steve Bannon, back Donald Trump conservative, that gives them, you know, a lot of, you know, that gives them a lot of cover with the right. When Tucker Carlson comes after them, Peter Thiel is a very powerful kind of shield to protect them.
Think about it just for a second. Mark Zuckerberg is not simply censoring opinions. He's prescribing which political opinions you're allowed to have.
And so what he's achieving here is, you know, number one, he's able to kind of to play both sides. And number two, I think he's managed to push Zuckerberg and Facebook, you know, to the right and to make sure that Facebook takes the concerns of conservatives seriously. And so in that sense, he's also valuable to conservatives. His presence on the Facebook board, you could argue, is good, even if you're a Facebook hating, you know, Trump loving Rumble user or something. Having Peter Thiel there is good because it's pushing Mark Zuckerberg, you know, maybe Mark Zuckerberg's not going to, like, you know, go on Tucker anytime soon, but he's going to be more open to those concerns. And I think you see that play out in the way that Facebook, you know, has related to the right over the last 4 years. There was a huge controversy in 2019 where Trump's campaign was running ads that were, you know, basically lying about Pelosi and the House Speaker. And Zuckerberg refused. The Democrats were saying, you got to take these ads down. Zuckerberg said, no, I'm not going to take them down. In fact, I'm going to give this speech all about the importance of, you know, free speech and the, like, basically these libertarian values. These are Peter Thiel's values, basically.
So the title of your book is The Contrarian. Jeff Bezos, who has infinitely more success and money than Peter, points out contrarians, people who go against conventional wisdom, are usually wrong. Is Peter Thiel usually wrong?
I mean, that's such a cutting, you know, Bezosism. Like, you gotta respect, you know, the wit of Jeff there. I think that usually wrong. I don't know. I mean, I think when you talk about these kind of out there statements that Thiel makes, like, those are usually wrong. I think the secret, though, to somebody like him is that he's probably not as out there as people think, and like, he's managed to, like, you know, craft this, you know, brand as being a great risk taker. But of course, he's a little bit more cautious than you might realize. You know, one of the things that's probably prevented him from being as rich as somebody like Jeff Bezos is that he sold his Facebook stock really early. He wanted out. He wanted to, you know, bank those winnings before something bad could happen. And that pattern has played out over a bunch of times in his career. He's somebody who when he has a win, he tries to cash in. And so that also kind of cuts against the sort of Silicon Valley mythology. I mean, it shows that you can be successful in the tech industry without really embracing any of the kind of normal, what we think of as like the normal stereotypical, keys to tech success. And so in that sense, he's a contrarian. And I think, I don't know. I think he's definitely been wrong a lot of times. And
well,
but he's also been right too.
Right,
so it's
Silicon
hard to know.
Valley, you only have to be right a couple of times.
Yeah. And I mean, there have been these like amazing failures, and one that I talk about in the book, and it's kind of a piece of history that's mostly been lost, especially in the tech world, is that Thiel, of course, was this very successful hedge fund manager in the 2000s. And he was way ahead, you know, 2008, he was the first half of 2008, just, you know, crushing it like the hottest guy on Wall Street. And he actually called the housing bubble correctly. He was right. He saw it coming. And there's anecdotes in the book. They're all worried about bank failures. They were going to take cash out of the banks and, you know, maybe we need to buy gold. And they basically got the sort of big picture idea right, but the execution was bad because they tried to sort of time their trades. The market crashed. They tried to kind of like buy some stock to ride the bounce back. They were wrong about, you know, they just kind of like overthought it. And so it shows like you can be right directionally or something, but still not profit from the thing that you do. But I don't know. I mean, I think he's pretty successful. I mean, obviously Jeff Bezos has more billions, but I mean, anybody who's in the billions, like assume they're getting it right some of the time.
Max Chafkin, reporter at Bloomberg Businessweek and author of The Contrarian, Peter Thiel, and Silicon Valley's Pursuit of Power.
Hulk Hogan, you're going to get the ultimate sentence in Long Island of Hulkamania.
One more thing before we go. The story of Peter Thiel's legal support for wrestler Hulk Hogan in a lawsuit against Gawker Media has been well documented, so we didn't do it here. It's a bizarre story of revenge dished out by Thiel. My opinion, Gawker got what it deserved. But Thiel's quest gives some journalists pause when they're writing about him. I asked Max about that. I won't get in deeply to the Gawker thing, but friends have asked you, aren't you worried he's going to come after you, Max?
I think that the answer to that question is yeah. Although I think basically that would be true no matter who I was writing about.
Sandhill Road is produced by Sean Myers under the leadership of Sarah Bueno and Stephanie Adruni. For more interviews with Silicon Valley's most influential entrepreneurs, check me out on TV at Press Here. That's Sunday mornings on NBC Bay Area and everywhere in the world on iTunes and at PressHereTV.com.